Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things.
I'm going to paint a picture of a scene. Mm-hmm. Imagine, if you will, a late 80s hot hatch folds.
Yeah.
Finished in black. As well finished as it could be in the late 80s.
Yeah.
Okay. It's box fresh. You open the door and you look across that dashboard and it's probably already not quite fitting right.
Yeah.
And the centre console's, again, a little bit creaky when you get in the car. But it's okay because it's got a boost gauge. And it's driven by a princess.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is it a blonde, quite glamorous princess from the 80s?
Short hair and lots of shadowing around the eyes for the makeup.
Oh, lots of shadowing.
Yes.
So much shadowing.
Very hot, in fact. Actual smouldering.
Yeah.
And we're talking about, of course, the Folds RS Turbo Escort from Princess Diana. Off of Princess Diana.
Off the Queen of Our Hearts, yes.
From the Queen of Our Hearts. In fact, she probably had a heart-shaped cushion on the back seat. If it was being displayed today at an event...
Oh, my God, one of those ones from the back of the Daily Express magazine that's like her face, very soft focus on a heart-shaped cushion.
Yeah, exactly that. Now, I'm not here to sit and talk about whether or not Lady Diana was assassinated or not, because that's not really fodder for this podcast.
There's all sorts escalated.
Of, well, there's all sorts of conspiracies, isn't there? CCTV conveniently not working around that tunnel, blah, blah,
stop
blah.
Stop it.
But...
Yes, the white Fiat Uno, we all know, but...
The Fiat Uno, exactly.
Do you know
the ultimate assassin's
me?
Car, obviously.
Because it's so spacious for a small car. last week was the anniversary of Diana's death.
Yeah.
And I was shocked to notice in the mentions of that she was 36 when she died.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I didn't, actually.
I don't want to sound like someone's grandma, but that's no age. That really is no age.
Well, I remember
I had no idea
it.
She was so young. I thought she was in her 40s for some reason, but 36.
Was it 1996? What year did... 97? What?
97?
97. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And because I remember it vividly, because I'd been out clubbing that night with a couple of mates, and we'd all gone back to one of our mates' parents' houses where he lived at the time, because his mum and dad were away.
Yeah.
And I fell asleep in my clothes on his spare room bed.
Oh, brilliant. You didn't even get into the bed.
And I woke up and the TV was on downstairs really loud for some reason. And I sort of staggered downstairs and there's my mate Ben, whose house it was, sitting there. And I went, what's going on? And he went, Princess Diana's died. And I was just like, I couldn't comprehend it.
No.
Because I had a terrible headache and it was just a confusing piece of information.
Yeah.
And then our other mate wandered in. He listens to this podcast, actually. Hello, House. He wandered in. Now, him and Ben, my two mates, were big Man City fans. Man City were due to be playing that day. And he came in and went, what's going on? We went, Princess Diana's died. And he went, oh fuck, does that mean the City game will be off?
Oh, my gosh.
And that's the effect that the death of Princess Diana had on people.
She was amazing. I actually didn't realise she'd never reach 40.
No, it's quite shocking, isn't it?
You think,
I just for some reason assumed. But I guess she was very young when she got married, so...
She was, yes. And, of course, the Mercedes that she died in is actually one of my favourite S-classes, controversially. I love the proportions of it, even though it is a bit of a bloater, must be said.
It is a bit of a bloater. The man responsible for its design, Bruno Sacco, the head of design at Mercedes for a long time,
yes,
oversaw that car and retrospectively said that he didn't like it. But he also said it was about a foot too tall. And I was thinking...
Too tall?
It can't be a foot too tall. I mean, it would be like a flipping lead sled if it was...
Yeah, would it would be.
It would look like one of those sort of...
Yeah, it would be a custom with a K.
Yeah.
I actually think now that's got my juices going, and I'm thinking maybe that's what we should do. Sacco says you need to roof chop. What W number is that one? Remind me.
140.
Faulty.
Faulty.
So take 12 inches out of the roof line of a W140. Wow, that thing's going to look 100 feet long. It's going to be amazing. I think someone off of this cast needs to do this.
Yeah, well, or at least send us a Photoshop. But I always remember those cars being very spacious. So you've got a bit of headroom to lose, I think.
Yeah,
maybe
you do.
Not that much. Not a foot of headroom. That's
you could
quite a lot.
Take out some of the stuffing in the seats, maybe a bit of memory foam in its place. And yeah.
We once made one of those S-classes into a country cottage on Top Gear. Well, we did the interior like a country cottage.
You did. I remember that.
And I tell you what, the car coped quite well considering there was a lot of concrete in there and a lot of other shit. And one of the funniest ad-libs I think ever appeared on Top Gear was because the driver's chair wasn't bolted down, and as Hammond took a corner, he just fell off the chair, or the chair fell over. And they're on the runway at Dunsfold in the slashing rain, in a car with no driver. And I think James shouts something like, "Regain control of the cottage!" And it always made me laugh. Words that have never been put together before.
Regain control of the cottage.
So
I like them. I haven't checked prices recently, but they went stupidly low because there was so much tech and complexity, people were terrified of them.
Yeah.
But I've probably mentioned it before. My Welsh friend, who was a Mercedes technician, who's now emigrated to Australia, he used to buy them probably every couple of months, fettle them a bit, and he'd always offer them out on our lowrider forum first. So there was a couple of lowrider guys who used to have them. They were nice.
Beautiful quality.
But anyway, back to the RS Turbo. I'm still processing the information about this Ford Escort. So
yes, for people who missed this, it was when? Last week?
Yeah,
it was
an auction.
From an auction,
it was a Silverstone auction.
Silverstone auction, and Princess Diana's former Escort RS Turbo from the 80s. Now, the backstory to this car is quite interesting because Diana had an Escort Cabrio, and the story goes that her protection officers were concerned that this was not a very secure car. A, because it had a convertible roof, and B, because
it was an 80s Ford.
It was an 80s Ford. I think they were mainly worried about it being stolen with a teaspoon.
But, yeah, I was going to say.
To try and keep a lower profile, they said, could you get an Escort with a fixed roof? And she went, yeah. So the story goes anyway. She went, yeah, I'd like an RS Turbo. Now, the RS Turbo was only available in white at that point. And again, they went, oh, that's still a bit conspicuous. So they spoke to Foltz. And Foltz said, we will make you a one-off black one for a lower profile. Now, I'm not sure this story is entirely true, although I have put it in one of my boring trivia books, but I'm not sure this story entirely checks out in as much as the car was hardly low profile. It still had bright blue stripes on it.
Spots.
And
Loys.
It was still, it had blue RS stickers on the side. And anyone who knew their cars would have gone, bloody hell, there's a one-off black RS Turbo and must be Princess Diana.
Yeah.
So I don't believe it was for low-profile reasons necessarily. I think maybe she just went, I want a black one and I'm the fucking heir to the throne. So could you make me one, please? They actually made more than one. Apparently they made the story goes they made two, I think, one for Diana and then one for another unnamed member of the royal household.
Oh, well, that would be Phil the Greek, wouldn't it? Because Phil the Greek was going to do Time Attack around Sandringham.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Yes.
He had a really naughty dump valve put on his, though, didn't he? It chuffing from
It was really, really snorty. And really in fact, snorty. He spelt Time Attack differently because it was actually how quickly he could get to his herb garden and back with a handful of said herb on the passenger seat. And it would always be a solitary sport for him. He would just time himself. It was just a personal best idea. He didn't want to publicise it.
You've got to make your own amusement, haven't you?
Yeah.
When you're... the Queen's husband. So anyway, yes, Diana's one-off, possibly not one-off, black RS Turbo from the 80s went to auction and sold for, at a hammer price of £650,000, which with fees translates to £722,500. Shitting Jesus.
It's £750,000 for a 1985 yeah. Ford Escort Turbo.
Yes.
Okay.
And, I mean, so I gather the winning bidder was from the UK as well, from Cheshire, it says here.
From Cheshire.
Yeah, so...
What I want to know is, well, I saw on Twitter that a chap who's who owns Lister Cars, Lawrence Whittaker, who won't mind me saying, he said, I had the offer 12 years ago to buy that for $23,000 and I turned it down. I'm now dying inside. But you see, the thing is I understand provenance and I understand pedigree when it comes to racing and homologation and pre-production. But I don't know. I just think this is just, it's very weird. However, when I looked up the current price guide for a Concours condition RS Turbo Mark I, it's about $35,000.
Your fast forward. Your
Larry Ford tax is a high tax. It's more than California state tax. You know when you go and buy a pair of socks in a Californian shop, and then you get to the counter and you think, well, this is $8 for these socks. That's cool. And then they go, well, plus this and plus that. You go, yeah, that's $24. You go, oh, what? Hang on a minute. Well, why don't you just put the actual price on a label?
I know. Why aren't Americans constantly annoyed by this? Because it's infuriating.
It's just you're having to do relentless maths. Relentless maths. And I find that troubling. I left school finding that troubling. Yeah, I don't want to have to do it every day now. I mean, maybe it's good. Maybe Americans are mathematicians. This is a question I have, but the price surely is the price. Like, it's the price. Just give me the price I will pay before I get told that I've been shoplifting and walking out of the shop.
Yeah. The amount of money that will be leaving my bank account and going into your bank account, just put that on the sticker. I mean, obviously, then some of it will be leaving your bank account and going to the state or federal government's bank account. But even so, just put the fucking price on the sticker.
I do not understand this. I'm being foreign.
It's something that's always... And Americans just seem to suck it up. I know it's different state to state, but California is a good example of where you go. Like you say, it's like you go, oh, this is only $10. Brilliant. What, 29? What the...
Yeah, because so I had to put a T-shirt back once because I was using up the last of my change before going home. And I had to do the walk of shame. It's like, oh, okay, so that T-shirt I can't afford. I'm $4 short. Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Bye. So, yeah, Princess Di's incredible escort or auction price. And I was thinking, well, if you had the choice... What would you spend instead?
What, £722,500?
£750,000. I know you can't go out and buy a Gordon Murray tea, I don't think. Don't think you can buy a Koenigsegg. You can get most of the McLarens.
Yeah.
You get nearly all of the Porsches, I think. New ones, anyway.
Well, I mean, you could have a 997 GT3 RS Gen 2, the greatest car in the world.
Yes, you could.
For that and some change at the moment, I mean, I'm sure.
Yeah, and a couple of holiday homes. And inside those holiday homes, each would have a garage. And within the garage, you could have something else so that if you can't be asked to drive the RS, there'd be something else waiting for you there. Like, I don't know, an Ariel Atom to go and get your... bag of chips in. Oh, a Nomad. What a holiday home car that is. I'm saying it like I've ever had a holiday home. I don't. I don't actually have a home at the moment, let alone a holiday home.
Just for context on this Princess Diana thing.
Yeah.
Last year, another of Diana's old escorts, she was quite a Folds fan.
She was.
Well, this one was... So an escort gear that was given to her... as an engagement present Treat yourself, love. It's the gear.
Oh, you absolute love monster, Charles. You love monster.
So, yeah, silver, five door escort gear, 1981. Sold for, including fees, £52,640.
Wow.
So, which suddenly looks like a bargain. At the time, it seemed a bit nutty because it's just an old escort, but
I was going to say,
but yeah, that was I mean, absolutely giving it away.
Yeah.
So I don't know where we're going with this particular.
I don't. I'm just. I'm living in disbelief. Every day clicks by after this auction, and I just sit there and go £750,000. £750,000.
Yeah, so it's bonkers.
What according you, to Haggerty, what's that they were saying? This is topped Haggerty's power list with an average of 813% increase over the standard car price that wouldn't have a link to Princess Diana. I love the great stats. This is great stats.
I might just buy a white one and write Princess Diana on it in a marker pen.
Can
yeah,
I?
It's been signed. It was signed. Did she always sign her name, Princess Diana? Yeah, she did actually. Yeah.
Yeah, she did. And
that'll
but
be
would you? And I'd
50 grand, please.
Upholstered the inside with hearts, sequined hearts. Oh, amazing! To be honest with you, I'd counter it. I'd probably put the Freddie Mercury Jeep Renegade under the hammer, and ask a keen 40 grand for that, and just see. See if you could get Brian May like at a convention involving nature or something, or the stars, astronomy, and just sort of like, oh, could you just sign this? It's actually the glove box of the Jeep Renegade that you've removed, or the, I don't know, the steering wheel boss. Oh, could you just sign that, Brian? Thanks.
I was going to say, we had quite a few people saying they've seen that Freddie Mercury Jeep that we talked about last week.
What? Have they?
Around the Somerset area, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And we've had some reports, a couple of them at least, people saying that there is or was a Daihatsu Sirion that was also
what,
Mercury
Freddy's back? Seriously?
Yeah.
A Sirion? Yeah. I quite like the Sirion.
So, yeah, this is, I think it was a Sirion. Now, you see, now, of course, I haven't prepared and I can't find the frigging things where people told us that. But they are here anyway. I'll come back to that. What I also want to say is your mention of the Mackenzie Crook-faced full suspension no brand mountain bike. Man,
yes,
generated quite a lot.
Oh.
Of a lot of traffic, if you like.
Did it resonate with the crowd?
It resonated. So, for example, Martin McKenna said, evening, chaps. Having spent the morning listening to the most recent podcast about every town having someone who's always going about on a bike, I thought I'd tell you about the one in my hometown. He's called Utmanut.
He's called what?
I presume Martin's in Scotland. He's called Utmanut.
Okay, Utmanut.
I think it was a term coined by some youths due to the fact that he's always out of his nut on something or other. I often see him on a bike, but then he'll sporadically disappear with rumours that he's died. Only to rise again. I think the rumours are mostly fuelled by small town syndrome. I don't really know what small town syndrome is, but just gossipy,
I know it's not enough to do. So the rumour mill spools up.
There we go. So yeah, Utmanut's dead. No, he's not. No. Adam Hayes says, I was moved to write to you after hearing your eerily accurate description of No Name Full Suspension Mountain Bike Man. I sighted / heard one recently, and he really made an impression. I live in a picturesque medieval market town in Kent, and every Friday people from the nearby medium-sized town descend on said market town, presumably to buy and sell scrap metal and old Nerf guns and other landfill from the back of the lorry.
Landfill.
My friend and I were drinking a coffee when a variation of no-name mountain bike man cruised past. His bike had no suspension, but it was a mountain bike with squeaking gears and a bag of tinnies draped over the bar.
Oh, amazing, amazing.
Yeah, it's good. He wore top-to-toe orange high-vis, was a bit older and fatter than you'd expect. He also had a toothpick in his mouth. Interesting detail there.
Oh, wow. So the toothpick, on the one hand, keeping an eye on his dentistry. On the other hand, if he high-sides on the bike, the toothpick's going to go through the back of his head.
Ugly scenes, yes.
Yeah.
Adam goes on, we didn't think anything of this man until he launched into a low-speed but very upright wheelie and at the same time unleashed an enormous fart that echoed off the cobbled streets and half-timbered houses and made everyone look round. He continued wheeling up the street without a care in the world. I was blown away as the muscle control exhibited in entering a wheelie position but also managing to release such a volume of gas without visibly staining the high vis.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. I can instantly, in my head, see that scene of very, very, very... is it Ackerman angle? What is the...
Ackerman,
yeah. Sorry, the Ackerman angle. It's almost the point of no return, isn't it? But it's in first gear on a 21 speed or a 24 speed, so extremely low geared. You have to pick that quite violently to get that up there. Fair play to him. I would not have released one from the rear chamber at that moment in time, but maybe he wasn't intending to. He was putting so much effort in. It's a bit like people in the gym that slightly overcook it and the O-ring. The O-ring has to, let out. Has to purge.
Gasket just lets go. You were saying last week that you think, like, that we agreed No Name Mountain Bike Man probably has a nickname several nicknames, and no one can explain where they came from, but certainly no one uses his real name. Now, Ben Day, one of our listeners, commented on YouTube, because you said he's probably called Zazzy.
Yes.
The one you saw is.
I thought so.
No, it's... Ben, I don't know if Ben is speculating or if this is based on someone he knew, but Ben says, yeah, Zazzy was called Nathan Stevens, but no one's called him that since junior school. His dad was a scaffolder. And I thought, that's good. That's good detail, Ben. I like that.
Nathan Stevens, did he just say?
Nathan Stevens. It's good, isn't it?
It's great. Yeah.
A listener called John Hammond said, I originally come from Biggleswade and our resident random on a bike was known as Bullfish. He looked like a frazzled version of Frank Burnside from The Bill, and he predated suspended mountain bikes, so his whip was a tired rally shocker that had two speed settings, stationary while grifting, and Mach 1 for travelling around, often in wheelie mode.
The rally shocker was a very underwheeled vehicle, a bit like the Suzuki Carry van. And the old Honda Actes, the extremely underwheeled vans, but I quite like them.
I'll do you one more. Dave Chambers says, your description of No Name Mountain Bike Guy perfectly described a mate of mine from the 90s called Mad Ad, otherwise known as Bert for no apparent reason.
What do you mean? So Mad Ad and Bert?
I know, but it's like either of those related to his real name? Probably
no.
Dave said he was the local purveyor of recreational substances. He used to live in various vehicles from a large furniture removal truck to a 1930s ex-army radio box towed by an AEC Matador recovery truck.
Bloody hell, that's a serious combo.
He upgraded his automotive transport to a V8-powered sand rail that wheelied everywhere it went.
What? Was it road legal?
Parked in... Well, probably not.
A V8 sand rail?
I mean, the man's a drug dealer, but legality is not in his wheelhouse. He says the sand rail wheelied everywhere it went and used to be parked in the back of the furniture truck when moving living location.
This
he eventually
guy.
Moved on to a V8-powered 8-foot-tall Land Rover that I once saw him towing behind the Matador with the radio box behind that.
What?
It was the 90s, and you could get away with doing stuff like that, although the local plod were never very impressed with his antics. So that's Mad Ad, also known as Bert.
I think Bert was a New Age traveller.
Yeah, sounds like it,
who had a bit of a thirst for V8 performance. And also army surplus, by the sounds of it. The AEC Matador recovery truck, that would be a seriously talky, low-geared monster.
So talky, so talky. I can hear that in my head. Tom Lanigan says, during the 90s, my brother used to buy moody anime tapes from a guy called Neil Dodge. I asked him several times if it was his real surname and never got a straight answer.
Neil Dodge?
Neil Dodge. We've got loads. Honestly, I've got so many of these. I can't even... I'm apologise if you sent one of these in and we.
I promise I'll have a wade through because I'm excited.
There's so many, but it only confirms the suspicion that we floated last week that every small to medium sized town has at least one of these.
It must do.
These guys.
It must do. Well, that.
Oh, there's just one that I wanted to bring up just because it could be a sort of a slightly mistaken spot of a mountain bike guy. It's from Cy Turner. He says, was rather hoping Johnny was in Poynton when he saw the mountain biker. Famous rider Josh Briceland, is that right? Briceland, yes. Lives on a narrowboat in Poynton and kind of fits the description. If it was him, he's actually one of the highest paid riders in the world. Such is the world of YouTube and influencing, although he was a World Cup downhill champion a few years ago.
Wow. I would very much like it to be him. And he does that whole kind of undercover bot type thing where he becomes the local the local army surplus wearing scrawny madman on a it's actually not a no-name mountain bike. His is a really good one that he's just covered it in masking tape and like bad aerosol cans.
A special mention to a listener called Rob Clay Parker, who sent us a picture of a no-name suspended mountain bike with a rusty chain outside his wife's shop. Rob doesn't say where this is. But he says, this is often outside my wife's shop, just left for a week or so, then disappears again. There's always a whiff of something illegal from the flats opposite.
It left for a week or so. It's like a burner bike, isn't it? Is that a thing, a burner bike?
I don't know, maybe. But it's amazing it's got left for a week and the owner doesn't come back to find the front wheel and everything has gone.
Kicked in. I need to ask his wife. Does his wife have a shop specialising in selling mountain bikes by any chance? does she bring in containerfuls of no-name mountain bikes, which have everything on them, but they're made out of chalk and they only last for about 9 months? Nobody oils any part of it.
There's so many of these. Thank you to everyone who.
Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one who's slightly fascinated by small town, no name, full suspension guy riding maniacally around. And I did see some suggestions on what rolling tobacco he might prefer.
Yes.
I think Drum came out on top from what I could see.
A listener called Toby Newton says, having been friends with several nicknamed bike wheelists in my teens, I can confirm Johnny was correct. They all exclusively smoked Cutter's Choice.
Was it? It was Cutter's Choice, was it?
Yeah, we got a few. Yeah, Drum comes up. I can't find them now, but there were a few little tobacco notes about that. And also, I went to Ben Langford, said, the local no-name full suspension mountain bike guy where I grew up lived in a caravan parked on his parents' land. He was the arcala for the local scout hut, and he only went by the name of Adder.
Oh, amazing. So he was an arcala, but refused to be called arcala. He was called Adder instead.
Adder, yeah. I mean,
that's really
weird.
Good.
They'd let someone who only calls themselves Adder to be an arcala. But,
Joe, I loved Cub Scouts. I really enjoyed my time at Cub Scouts. Thought it was fantastic. Think about it frequently. I was going to say, on Twitter, a chap called Neil Rapsey, at Roverman68.
Yeah. Neil's a regular correspondent.
He is. It made me chuckle because he found in a local car park in Tesco's in Llanelli in Wales, a deceased-spec Audi coupe, which looked really good. I think it's 1993.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
So the Aero Audi coupe. And it said, lovely deceased-spec Audi, complete with cushions and an Atlas, still doing daily duties at Tesco. When he said Atlas, at first I thought, I think I got Atlas mixed up with an actual globe. You know those illuminating globes as a kid you might have got for your birthday to put in your bedroom?
Yeah.
As a bedside light. I was thinking, what, one of them, like on the rear seat? That would be extremely odd. So if you don't know where you're going, you just quickly grab the globe, spin it a bit. Maybe this guy's or woman is quite eccentric. But no, now I realise it's a book, a map book, as people call them. Ring bound.
Now, I was going to actually call a steward's inquiry on that picture because I don't know that you can describe a car as deceased spec until the owner's died. Is that
Or you find out that it's just been bought by someone who bought it off a dead person. I think that has to be clarified.
The cushions and the Atlas suggest to me a very careful, possibly the original owner,
that's,
who is elderly.
That's OAP spec.
Yeah.
So
you have to wait until God forbid, they die, and then the car becomes deceased spec because of its immaculateness. And
would it be like, Wooden Picket or another name of a coach builder? Would it be like, I don't know, Werther's and Atlas spec? So everyone knows, everyone in the know knows, oh, right, okay, it's an old person spec car.
Yeah.
Or it'll have a rug. We've already talked in previous casts about the Panama hat, which is a common occurrence in Britain anyway. Mm.
Yeah.
Sometimes a tissue box, an embellished tissue box. So there's lots of hallmarks of the OAP spec car.
Oh, definitely.
And I always look out for them. If you ever see a car for sale and you see in the pictures those sorts of things, you know you're onto a good one. You've got to expect the corners of each bumper to be scraped. You will have to repaint the bumpers, but apart from that, it's a small price to pay for what will be a minty mechanical vehicle.
If it's a K12 Micra, it will have that bit of the back bumper where it's been perfectly pushed in, because they all have that basically. I don't know.
The one where you have to get a hairdryer on it and wave it around. It sometimes pops back.
Have you ever successfully done that though?
No, I've got colour back into a bumper before using a bit of a hairdryer, but not massive dents. No, I'm a bit scared in case I train it on an area too long and it starts to turn to slop. So I've never done it. But
the bumper just starts dripping.
Yeah, like blancmange.
I think you'd need a lot of heat for that, wouldn't you? It's like when there's like a factory fire and they show the pictures of the cars that were parked nearby at the time and all the plastic bits have melted off, and it's quite sort of grimly fascinating.
No, it's horrible. It's horrible.
Since we're talking about pictures on Twitter, I wanted to just give a shout out to someone called Joe Brundell. I think it's Brundell. Brudenell. Actually, it might be. Anyway, hello, Joe. He remembered a few podcasts ago, we were talking about cars used as signs, and he's posted this picture, I'll put it up on the Patreon, of an absolutely knackered Metro that's advertising the Star Inn. And in the back window's been covered as a sort of sign, a friendly, relaxed country pub, where they've run country and pub together so it fits, but the Metro is dented to bilio and the back bumper's falling off. What? And it's all sunk down on its hydrogas, parked on a sort of verge but outside the pub possibly, but it looks like absolute dog shit.
So it's doing the opposite of what it's trying to achieve. It's dissuading people.
Yeah, because you go, oh my God, if the state of their kitchens is anything like the state of that Metro, I'm not going in there for a bite to eat. It'd be disgusting. It's a remarkable thing.
So if it was a scrap metal dealer, it would be appropriate.
Yes.
Come here and weigh in your stuff.
Yeah, but it's not. It's trying to advertise a relaxed, friendly country pub.
So is country pub one word, did you just say?
Country pub is one word, country pub, which is something to consider for the future. Perhaps it should be. Do you fancy going to a country pub for lunch today? It's on the rear wing, it then says, with the rear wing, which is massively stoved in. It says five minutes up the Mamelad Road. I don't know where that is.
Mamelad.
Do you know where that is?
No. No, okay. Is that Lady Mamelad?
Is
it? Itchy, kitschy, cuckoo, char.
Country pub.
Mooker, chooker, latter, yar, yar.
I can't see. It looks like it says all the roundabout. I think it must be at, but it looks, it's at the roundabout. Maybe it's on. On the roundabout at the old ICI factory. On the A4042. There's too much information on the side of his car.
Who's going to read all of that in 2 seconds?
It's like those adverts on lorries by motorways. The years go, I've only got about a fifth of that.
Yeah, it just needs to be two words in big letters, like pub here.
Mamelad, it doesn't... Am I... Mamelad Road in... Probably pronouncing this terribly wrong, because it turns out it's in Wales.
Oh,
I think it's in Pontypool.
I feel like we've got to go to this pub and see the stoved-in Metro.
Well, I was wondering, was the Metro actually quite tidy when it was parked there, and people have just sort of kicked it and driven into it?
Of course they have, because that's what.
Because it looks like it might be actually parked.
If I did something like that, I know why they do it. But if I was to do that, I would cover the whole car in plywood and paint it a jolly colour. And then it would look like a huge Lego brick that you could then write your sign on. And then you could unbolt the cover for the windscreen and get in it and drive it. But kids aren't going to pull light clusters off and stuff like that. Well, actually, they probably will. They'll probably just set fire to it. But anyway, I don't own a pub. And if I did own a pub, I wouldn't advertise it with a knackered metro. So, maybe I will own a pub one day. Never say never. Maybe we will, Richard. Maybe we'll. Maybe we will. Sillier things have happened. I've got a conundrum for you.
A conundrum?
Well, no, it's not a conundrum. Actually, I'm lying. It's just a query. You know woollarding?
Yes.
What we call woollarding, one leg up on the tyre or the wheel of a car whilst posing for a photo, which I think was in vogue some years ago.
I felt like it got slightly done to death on the socials.
It got done to death, but back when it wasn't ironic, you used to have a lot of team photos, race team photos, and I think I might have even seen Stirling Moss woollarding at one point back in the 50s.
Really?
Yeah. I've seen some, and I suppose it's now seen as sort of mansplaining a little bit. So you probably wouldn't, because you're almost framing the power bulge in full view of the photo, which might not be appropriate. So I was thinking, woollarding, is it a bit of a, you know, like serious woollarding, not ironic woollarding? Is it a bit of a a bit of a lost art, and is it akin to when metal bands, I know we talk about metal bands a lot on this cast and I don't even know why, but when they put one leg up on the Marshall stack on the monitor speaker when they're doing a gig, so that, you know, that it's usually the lead singer, actually it's not always the lead singer, sometimes it's the guitarist, one leg up whilst giving it everything vocally or wanking the axe. Do you think I want to know which one came first. Was it woollarding with one leg up on the tyre of a car, or was it one leg up on the Marshall stack when you're giving it the crowd what they came for off of a gig? What do you reckon?
I don't know. Because I was kind of, are they still doing that?
I don't know.
I mean,
I don't know if is it seen as being dated and a bit old hat now? So do you put, does anybody put one foot up on the monitor speakers? There's a lot of musicians and listen to this podcast, it seems.
Yes.
And I'm hoping that we can get a true answer to this. Is it seen as a sort of 80s metal manoeuvre? Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, there we go.
I don't know.
And woollarding, I mean, I've looked at lots of photos of one leg up done in a non-ironic way. And it does look quite awkward the more you stare at it. It's a bit like the word should and could. If you look at them for too long, they look completely wrong, and you just can't work out whether they were the right spelling or not. It confuses me. So that's something I want an answer about. I want to know whether people still put legs up on Marshall stacks in concert, and maybe someone's dad or uncle is a bit of a woollarder and doesn't do it ironically. They just do it, like when they're chatting to you, one leg goes up.
One leg goes
up on the tyre. We all know people like that.
Yeah, like a sort of people who lean.
There's a door leaner.
Casual way on a door frame.
There's a door leaner.
Door leaners. Yeah. But it's arm up, leaning on the door frame.
Arm up.
It's a bit of a
yeah. And you know the dawning of every car having air conditioning now. Of course, you don't see the window down and the arm on the door with the hand grabbing the rain gutter anymore. And that was a thing.
It's true.
The hand grab of the rail. Is that because I used to love seeing that? I used to think, oh, that's so cool. Look at that. Driving around with his arm on the door. He's got his hand grabbing the rail. He's listening to a bit of Def Leppard.
Yeah, he's got it. I suppose it was the change in the roof design and guttering of cars.
Well, they went gutterless.
Yeah.
Of course they went. Was that the demise of the gutter grab? Was the fact there's no gutter to grab?
I don't know, but I always feel that cars with old-fashioned rain gutters, there's a thing where you just go, I think you feel like you could cut your hand on this, depending on how well finished
it is. Yeah, the pressing could be
crude, aren't they?
You can get
Yeah,
cheaper cars, not so well finished, and there's not so much paint in them. But like my Beetle, for example, has got a pristine gutter. I love grabbing the gutter. Yeah, it's nice. It's nice, quite substantial. Gutter grabber. Sounds wrong.
Gutter grabber.
Sounds wrong. Sounds good. Had a lot of people talking about piss fisters in the last week or so, countering it with the term poo view, which I thought was interesting.
Poo view.
Yeah, poo view. But not many people do a nature poo. I mean, that's desperate, isn't it? You've got to really... That's your last
that's
resort
an emergency,
situation.
Yeah.
Mean, you've got to be in an ill state. And a desperado. So I would say poo view will apply to maybe those sort of ski lodges where they have one-way glass and there's a bathroom which has got a lovely full glass end so you can have like a shower overlooking a valley and no one's going to stare at you and go, that guy's totally naked having a shower.
I had an outdoor shower a few months ago.
Did you?
A posh hotel, yeah. It was really nice.
Outdoor.
I mean, it was in a courtyard, this one. It was in a courtyard with a very high wall, so you felt that no one was going to overlook you. And I was like, it was a bit cold, but I was like, no, I'm going to give it a go. I'm just going to do it because I'll regret it if I don't. And it was invigorating and delightful.
Oh, did you go warm water? Did you go freezing cold?
Oh, I went warm water.
Joe Wicks back. Oh, okay.
No, no.
Okay.
No, I didn't want to. I wasn't doing it to punish myself. I was doing it because I thought it might be quite. You know, you get that pleasant sort of baked Alaska effect where the water's warm and the air is cool.
That's lovely.
It was very nice.
I haven't done that for a while. I've been having cold showers, though, of late, just to see if I can do it. It's very, very hard. And my brother...
Why would you do that, though?
Because it's been very warm, and it does. It kind of... It shrinks the skin back around your bones and makes you feel a little bit stronger than what you really are. But my brother gave me some wise words of advice. He said, go. If you need a toilet, go for a wee before you do that. Because he said that your meat and two veg will shrink to the point where you won't actually be able to hold them and get anything out of them. And it's true.
Right.
Wise words from my brother. Real facts there.
So wise. So practical advice.
Real practical advice about that. Now, you were going to talk to me about somebody waving on a scooter in Germany.
Glad you've brought that up because I'm not prepared.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, wait, hang on. No, hey, now,
I was laughing because I have no idea. I had no idea what this was going to involve, apart from waving and a scooter. But
it's just, I'll be honest, I am poorly prepared.
It just reminds me it reminds me of that incident, which I've talked about previously, where I accidentally threw a sandwich at a motorcycle policeman in Spain. When we were filming for Fifth Gear, and it got absolutely bollocked by this Spanish cop.
Accidentally throwing a sandwich at
him. He was in my blind spot, and I just didn't know. But it wasn't the whole sandwich, it was just about a corner of it. But nevertheless, it just happened to be a motorcyclist, and it did hit him in the face.
I found it. A patron of ours called Malt Ottermeyer, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, Malt?
Hell might.
You speak German. Is it M-A-L-T-E? Malta or Malt?
I think that'd be Malt.
Okay.
I reckon that's Scandinavian.
Malta. The story takes place in Germany, so that's what I'm guessing. But
okay.
Anyway.
Well, hi Malt. Malta.
Malt/Malta says, Dear Smith and Sniff, a bit late to the party, but I had some kind of thank you waving accident. A few years ago, I was driving home from university in an eastern town in Germany on my 1986 Simson Schwalbe, which is a kind of GDR Vespa.
Simson were...
Do you know these?
I know Simpsons, yes, yeah.
Okay. I had to wait on a busy junction for passing cars, and suddenly I noticed my boss from my side job coming from the left in her first-generation Audi A5. Lovely detail there, first generation, just so people can picture it. She noticed me and signaled me to merge into the traffic. She was quite an impressive woman and a lawyer, and I instantly got nervous. I quickly pulled the clutch lever, kicked the first gear in, and went for it. As I passed her, I raised my left hand to thank her. Unfortunately, at this point, I was only halfway through the whole releasing the lever for getting into gear process. The lever snapped back, and the gear was engaged immediately, neither matching my speed nor RPM. The Schwalbe rodeoed onto the junction under the sound of its very struggling 50cc engine, with me trying to get things under control. Adding insult to injury, its original tyres from 1986 did not have a chance against the wet tram tracks, onto which I managed to manoeuvre myself, and I crashed in the middle of the road.
Oh no! He went down, he put it down!
He dropped on wet tram tracks! Dropped his Simpson scooter.
In front of what? A sexy co-working lawyer lady that he had...
Well, he didn't say sexy, he said impressive, but maybe we can infer sexiness, I don't know.
Oh gosh, that's so bad.
Malt/Malta adds PS, boring Simpson facts. In the GDR, scooters up to 50cc's had a top speed of 60 kilometres an hour, where in the West it was in his 45.
Oh.
After the reunification, this was solved with an exemption in German law for Eastern scooters built before 1990, which can still be legally driven at 60 kilometres an hour, making them quite popular, and prices are rising. Excellent additional information there.
Well, look, thanks for being a patron, but thanks for such an amazing account of your misfortune. It was...
It's painting pictures with words.
Very much painting pictures.
Wave thanks and accidentally letting the clutch go is an excellent way to have an accident on a vintage scooter. I had some more stuff to read out to you, and of course now I can't find it. What else did I say to you yesterday? I must remember to tell you, read out this.
You said, hang on, I'll scroll back, because I was just going to start talking about something completely different, not Kevin MacLeod's Grand Prix designs. Where he visits people who have tried to make hasty racetracks in their garden and says that'll never work. Hang on a minute. Robert Plant's... Someone that went to school with Robert Plant's son and has some car information about Led Zeppelin frontman.
Yes. Now I'm going to find that. But on the way to finding that, can I just read out a message from Toby Littlechild, who, that's his name, it's not a description. He has seen a Smith & Sniff sticker on Cromer Pier.
What?
And when I asked him if he meant as in stuck to the pier, he said yes, actually stuck to it. So if anyone's down at Cromer Pier in Norfolk anytime soon, have a look out for a Smith & Sniff sticker.
That's someone's crabbing. Someone's been crabbing. That's amazing. Is that one of the cheeky free ones we were giving out at Goodwood? Or is that someone's actually gone to the merch shop, bought one, and decided to not stick it on a vehicle, but stuck it on a pier? That's admirable. This person needs repaying for their time and their effort.
Also, just a quick shout out to Peter Hope, who has drawn our attention to the fact that... So this week... If you're listening to this on the Monday it comes out, this week, this Thursday, we're recording the first Smith & Sniff on that Live of Things event at Morgan in Malvern. Peter has sent us a link to what he describes as a potential post-Malvern gig venue, and it's a curry restaurant called Flute Signature. Which, I mean, we've got to go, haven't we? Flute Signature. Flute Signature.
Well, I'm trying to work out what that's got to do with Indian meals. Flute Signature, 22 Graham Road, Malvern. Wow. Food hygiene rating, 4 out of 5.
Maybe someone's just playing the flute constantly during a meal.
I'd love that.
Could actually be, would you? I don't know.
And it also, at the bottom of the website homepage, it says copyright Flute Signature.
See, to me, a Flute Signature is just DJ Khaled's written his name on something. But
That is a true Flute Signature.
While we're going through messages, Robin Lillico, another patron of ours, just a quick note for Johnny. He says, you're wrong about the Destiny's Child lyric. It's I'm a survivor, keep on surviving.
No, you need to listen to it again. Two out of three times they say that, but then they say keep on survivor, and it really irritates me. If I was in the studio... I would have just said, no, you need to retake that. You need to do that one again.
You've done it wrong. Okay.
I'm afraid I don't let Destiny's Child off lightly, because they used to deeply irritate me in the early 2000s, maybe late 90s, actually can't remember. But
since you're kind of picking fights with listeners, I don't know whether you want to, but they want to pick fights with you. We've had loads of messages
about Freddie Mercury inaccuracies.
Yes, a lot of people really cross about the fact that your telling of Queen Live Aid history last week was taken from the Bohemian Rhapsody movie and apparently is massively inaccurate.
Oh,
including, I won't read out any of these because they're all the same, basically going, you got it from the movie, but at least a couple of people went, I'm not even a big Queen fan, but Johnny's completely wrong about Queen. Get Queen right. And it's like, you sound like you are a Queen
fan. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I don't know a great deal about Queen. And yes, I did think that the movie, foolishly on my part, played an accurate storyline, but maybe it didn't. Okay. Well, go. I'm gonna go home and beat myself with with a yellow jacket. So
yeah,
I'm gonna shout Barcelona in the mirror.
I found the one that I wanted to read out to you. So it's from a patron called Tom Lambert. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Tom says, I went to school with the son of friend of the show, Robert Plant.
I wish.
He's not, I don't. Yeah, I think just mentioning him doesn't count.
Doesn't mean he's a
show,
friend.
But it's nice to think. Tom says he tooled around in a W126 coupe and had a Land Cruiser Amazon.
Did he?
Signing autographs for children who had no idea who he was.
A W126 coupe. Okay, so that's an SEC then.
Yeah, nice. He used to give me goalkeeping tips while I was prowling in between the posts in under-9 games.
Under-9?
The Mercedes with gold wheels rather stood out in a car park of Volvos and Peugeots. Gold wheels?
See, I thought it was very unplant to go for the gold rim, yeah. But maybe not. Wow. Okay.
I don't know. I wonder if those are aftermarket. Well, it could be those like 5-spoke AMG ones that are very dished.
Yes, I know the ones.
Because you could get those colour-coded, couldn't you?
Yeah, you could. They had a lovely lip on them.
So
polished
yes,
lip.
Yes, so polished lip in session tonight.
Oh, that's cool.
So
the Amazon is a good shout.
Car info. Yeah, I could see that because I sort of somehow imagine that for some reason Robert Plant's always getting, he needs a car that he can get a bit dirty on the inside and out. Do you think he does like a lot of gardening or
something?
Yeah, I think he's a couple of really leery dogs.
Yeah, I think he enjoys rural life. So by very nature, especially in winter, he doesn't want to be cleaning every other day the car out. Or no, I reckon he'll have some large things like red setters.
Yeah. Red setters, yes.
Yes. Can you imagine
quite
that?
Nutty dogs.
Yeah, like three of them.
The only thing I want to talk to you about this week is I got lost the other day while I was out for a run. Just totally, totally lost and went down a street that I've never been down before, quite posh, lovely houses.
Sweet, sweet houses.
Sweet, sweet area. Location, location.
Lovely.
Johnny, location.
Leafy, lovely. Affluent, leafy, lovely.
Lovely. So
sweet.
Frigging leafy. Sweet. So there was a nice, big, lovely, sweet, sweet house. And on the drive, there were two Alfa Romeo Giulia Quattro Formaggios.
No way. Two?
Yeah.
Same colour?
Two. No. There was a bright green one.
Oh,
and
gosh.
It was brand new or near as damn it, because it was a 22 plate.
Yeah.
And then there was a grey one. I couldn't see the plate on that. But it was definitely a Quattrofoglio. Quattrofoglio?
Four types of fog.
Four types of fog.
Yes.
The sort of the pea super and then one of those thin ones and then a sort of very, very kind of wet mountain one.
Sort of lost ship type depth of fog.
Yeah, and then one of those ones caused by terrible coal usage in London in the 50s.
Yes.
So there's a grey one and a green one. And
the green is the best colour. It was one of the best colours of any car in the last 20 years.
It's striking.
It's such a beautiful, to me, it absolutely knocks me out. It's so good, so vivid. I really want to own one. I'd like to own one.
Well, I just thought that's quite interesting. Now, is it someone lives there and they've got one and they've befriended someone else with one because there aren't that many around and they've come round for a cup of coffee? Or is it the people live there, they liked one of them so much they got another one?
It's interesting that they
work it out.
Well, it's unusual that you'd have two like high-ranking ones. It'd be a bit like in the olden days if you had a Sierra Saloon and a Cosworth, but they wouldn't both be Cosworths because that would be a bit daft. Why would you have two exact... Well, when I say daft, not really. Who am I to judge? I don't know anything about Queen. So I think maybe it's one of that. If one of them wasn't a quad fog Quadfargoglio, then I would get that more. But yeah, that's so cool though.
I want to go back and have another look at some point, except that I'm not entirely sure where this street was, because as I said, I was lost.
It's not a perfect car, the Quadfog, but I would urge listeners to really take some time out to have a good look around one. I found it a really exciting car to spend a week with. I'd like to put some more miles on one. I think they're really good. I would definitely, it seems to have more to it charismatically than a lot of other cars it competes with.
I've gone off M3s a bit. I just, ever since that sort of last, when was it? The last M3.
I think the world,
turbocharged six in it. It's just,
I just think the world has stopped caring about M3s, apart from influencers who are being paid by BMW on the quiet to talk about M3s. Everybody else doesn't really care about M3s anymore. I'm going to put that out there. There's a reason.
Down my street.
There's a reason why I haven't featured one on my YouTube channels, because I just don't really care about them anymore, because there's much more exciting cars in that realm, or for that price point.
Well,
should I say
price point? What's an M3 now?
Oh, I don't know, 90 grand?
70
no.
grand?
Let's have a gander. Hang on.
I'll go have a look. But there's an M3. There's an old shape M3 down my street, and it's a manual.
Yeah.
But it has a number plate that appears to be trying to tell you that.
Oh.
It looks at a, if you really squint, like it says manual, and I was sort of like,
I know, is his name Manuel?
That's, yeah, it could be, yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
It's just the person's name.
Now
you've got the BMW M3. You've got the Touring, you've got the M3 Touring, which is what lots of people are talking about, and I'm very keen to drive. Yeah, 78 grand the new M3.
78 grand for a saloon and 83 for a Touring. Yeah,
and they do come in a lovely green that's not that dissimilar to the four types of fog Alfa Romeo.
Oh, yeah.
But the difference is the four types of fog is a proper look back car, look back again, look back again. Oh, my gosh, how cool does that car look? Whereas the M3 just looks like an anteater. So,
God, I'd forgotten about this M4 CSL that they're doing in the current shape. What a horrible looking car that is. Just awful. Just terrible. And it's, again, I get so bored of people going, oh, been through the whole book because that grill. It's like, the grill's not the worst bit. The grill's like the, you know, the dead cat to distract you from something else. It's just, all of it's terrible. And this one is covered in little coloured bits and tat and, ugh, it's just horrid.
Do you know what? The new BMW design, it's a bit like the band Slipknot, right? You can listen to their music, and they are talented musicians, and you can enjoy their music. But it doesn't mean that you can stand in front of people and say, I really like the way Slipknot look. Yeah, I love that bloke that has a load of like knitting needles hanging out of a rubber black mask, and he carries around a bag full of dead crows. Yeah, I really like that. No, you don't.
That's my problem with Slipknot, is they look like they smell.
I bet it's awful, awful. I mean, but that's the thing, do you know what I mean? Like, I know the M3 will drive brilliantly, and I know a lot of BMWs have always driven in an engaging manner, but you don't have to then pretend that they look good, because they don't.
But that's the problem. You see, the last M3 didn't drive brilliantly. It actually was pretty awful, and I gather they sorted it out, but the early ones certainly were not particularly nice to drive. So it's not a given that a BMW M car is going to be superb, much so I gather that M5 CS is meant to be spectacular, but
spectacular, mate.
Spectacular. Anyway, we should probably moor this one up.
What? What? Right next to that boat of Zazie's, where he's still trying to work out how vapes work. So in the meantime, he's still smoking a pouch of Cutter's Choice.
Yeah, very the hollow cheeked mountain bike man. I just put it next to him, and he.
He's the only man probably, in Britain that still talks about doing a bong.
do people not do bongs anymore?
I got no idea, Richard. I'm 43. I've got no sodding idea about bongs.
I have simply no idea what's going on anymore amongst the young. But I imagine they're all just smoking weed on their phones these days.
Do you know what the new bong is?
What?
Dark fruit cider.
Oh, now.
Have you noticed? It seems to be the party, edgy, naughty bastard of the cider world these days. I don't understand.
Somebody on our YouTube comments said that it was one of those classic my brother's mate kind of things. And I'll never be able to find it again. But basically, they said that they knew someone who worked at the factory where dark fruits is made. And no one who works there will drink the stuff.
No one.
Because it's made from extremely concentrated apple juice that burns the floor if it gets spilt.
Bloody hell.
So, there we are.
Well, I don't trust sort of top of the pops levels of cider. It's too high in sulfites. It's a bit like E10 fuel for your internals.
Yeah.
On that side of things, we should probably stop talking, Richard.
Probably should. Before we do, though, I've got three things to tell you. They are, one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Slate Spake Show, in which Johnny slags off that jolly bloke from the airport show out of the 90s this week. He's following him around shouting, "Jeremy, you've got a shit beard." If you don't like that because it's complete bollocks, then why not try The Late Break Show, which has got many excellent videos on it. Smashing look at that chap Steve from Somerset with his old Benton F1 cars.
Oh, did you enjoy that one?
I did, yeah, because what a dude. He's totally cool about the fact he owns two really cool... And the fact that he started one up for you, which...
Yeah,
no small undertaking.
No, I was worried that it, because when I was arranging that shoot, I said, "Listen, are we still going to be okay to start it up? I don't expect to drive it anywhere." But he went, "Yeah, should be fine. Yeah, it takes about 2 hours to do the necessary warming up procedure." And I'm like, "Oh, that's so cool."
It's cool. Have a watch of that.
Yeah, so that was good. And by the time this comes out, there'll be the new MG4. Review out, which I think is a bit of a surprise car, which maybe we'll talk about on the next podcast, because it's quite an interesting car, and that's what this is supposed to be about, this podcast, cars.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
God, we should have remembered that about an hour
ago. Yeah, not a full suspension bike, people.
Yeah. The second thing I've got to tell you is that I've got various books out. The Boring Car Trivia series. If you don't own any, or indeed all of them, please amend that immediately. They're just full of little bits of trivia about cars. You could have guessed that already. Available exclusively from Amazon as an ebook or a paperback, or you can get the paperback through the Smith & Sniff merch shop. Go to thelatebreakshow.com. Follow the link to Smith & Sniff. There's various other bits of merch, T-shirts, mugs, etc. And the third thing I've got to say is sometimes you'll see a hole in a hedge or a wall, and you can tell it's somewhere where the animals pass through regularly. Well, there's a word for that. It's called a smooze.
What is that, an M, S-M or S-N?
Smooze, yeah, S-M-E-U-S-E. Smooze is an old word for a hole in a hedge or a wall, but typically applied to one that has been made by animals to pass through.
Well, there's one of those near me, but unfortunately it seems to get frequented by coursers that don't stop in time. And they're usually fully understeering at the time. And
It's a Vauxhall smooze.
It's a Vauxhall.
Yeah, there's one in our garden, which is deeply annoying. It's made by a badger, we think, but it means that the dog keeps escaping. It's really, really annoying.
Snooze.
And that's that. For those of you who are coming to the live show this Thursday, we're looking forward to seeing you.
Yeah, very much so.
And we hope that we will put on some kind of show. Everyone who's not coming will be able to hear the results a week today.
Yeah.
On next Monday, the podcast will be a recording of the live show, assuming that the recording worked. If there's no podcast, you'll know that something went chronically wrong. Anyway.
And if you didn't manage to get a ticket and you wanted a ticket, hopefully we will be doing a couple more of these forthwith, going forward.
We are actively working on the next one, which is there's a potential for it to be somewhere quite exciting, actually.
Yes.
Oh, in a different part of England. And then we've had lots of thank you to everyone who sent us little suggestions for places to have this live recordings. Some of them have been very handy.
They have.
And, we will try and act on them.
Yeah, we're going to try
act, Gary.
We're going to try and keep it as try and cover as many legions as we possibly can. And I completely forgot to say, rest in peace, Gorbachev. I've driven his wife's armoured Zill on an old episode of Fifth Gear. It was really enjoyable. Also scary.
YouTube for that. Yeah. Right, okay, well look, thank you ever so much for listening to this one, and we'll see you for a live one next time. Goodbye.
Bye!
You just have a swig of dark fruit.
Do you know what my mate, an old guy used to live opposite my friend Dan, and his nickname was Bye-bye. And he would always shout, he'd say bye-bye at least four times when saying goodbye. Bye-bye, bye-bye, bye-bye. And he'd go, look, we've already said bye. We've already closed the deal. Let's go our separate ways. Bye-bye, bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.